It's a public holiday in most parts of the country today, and I'm wondering if you've got kids, what are they doing at the moment? Are they playing outside, maybe riding a bike or building a cubby house, or are they in front of some sort of screen, perhaps watching television or on the computer, that sort of thing? Contemporary children do spend a lot more time indoors. In fact, we all do, and this has produced an epidemic of nature deficit disorder, according to the author Richard Louv. He was in Australia recently and joined me in the studio, where we began by talking about how he defines nature deficit disorder.
Well, first, in Last Child in the Woods, I make clear several times that it's not a known medical diagnosis. Perhaps it should be, but it's not. It is, however, a kind of shorthand way to describe what many of us have known was going on, even if it was only in the back of our minds that we knew this was happening, which is the disconnection between the current generation of children and perhaps future generations from the natural world.
And is it actually having an effect that you can measure?
Well, what's been measured finally in the last decade, the people who study child development have finally been looking at how the natural world affects child development. We looked at how everything else affects it, but somehow the natural world slipped by. But what they're finding out is that, for instance, in Australia, some good research has been done in Australia on myopia, for instance, the nearsightedness, and they're connecting that to how much kids spend, how much time kids spend indoors looking at screens rather than outdoors. There has been work done at the University of Illinois, for instance, on attention deficit disorder. And the researchers there have found that kids as young as 5 years old, the symptoms of attention deficit disorder get much better with just a little bit of time outdoors. Cognitive functioning, ability to learn, physical health, emotional health, psychological health. There are lots of studies now emerging. We need more research, but there are a lot of studies now emerging that show just how great natural world experience is for kids.
So when you say natural world, do they have to be, you know, in the bush, as we'd say in Australia, or in the wild woods, or is it enough to be in a park or just outdoors in the garden?
Well, it's a great question. I personally believe that nearby nature is just as important to human experience as wilderness. And by nearby nature, I mean some of the things that you just listed. It can be in your own backyard. It can be that clump of trees at the end of the cul-de-sac that kids play in, that to an adult may look like something that's very insignificant, but to a child can be a doorway into a whole other world. All of those kinds of nearby nature places, gardens, et cetera, are very, very important for children and for the rest of us.
Mm. I was thinking, actually, I wouldn't drop my six-year-old off in the Blue Mountains National Park. It's very rugged countryside, but it's good that she's outdoors. And it occurs to me that it's good that she's outdoors in the garden without me.
Well, that's true. Parents are in a tough situation. Certainly in the United States, that's true in terms of the amount of fear they feel. In Australia, there may be slightly less fear felt, but I think it is also felt here. People who are aware of any news media are concerned about stranger danger, that somebody's going to snatch their child. When you look at the actual statistics, the number of stranger abductions, for instance, has been going down for about over 20 years. But what's been going up is the amount of coverage that 24-hour cable television gives to a handful of terrible crimes, and they repeat them over and over again. That's a very definition of conditioning. So we're very afraid as parents. So it's tough to let our kids have the kind of independent play that we experienced when we were kids. So we're going to have to work out new ways to do that, to stand back, to, you know, we're not talking about hovering over them with nature flashcards. We really need to stand back, let them have that experience, and accommodate that fear as best we can by having them within eyesight.
We do have this concern about children. One thing that's definitely changed since I was a boy, and I was allowed to roam around a lot more, is there is a lot more traffic now. That is a real difference.
That is, and that's a real danger. And one of the things that I talk about in Last Child in the Woods is the idea of comparative risk. I'm not for a second saying there's no risk outside. in nature. There's risk from nature. That's part of its attraction. But I am suggesting that we begin to think comparatively. Yes, there's risk out there, certainly from traffic. That's a very real risk. There's also a risk in raising a generation of children under protective house arrest, a risk to their physical health. I mean, if we want to look at a really big risk, we'll look at child obesity. Pediatricians saying this generation of children may be the first to have a lower life expectancy than their own parents in our history. A risk to their psychological health, a risk to their connection to the natural world, to the world itself, to the idea of community. All of those are real risks as well.
Yeah, there's clearly benefits, and some you talk about some of them in the book, and physical health gets a mention, and a life of the senses versus a life of the mind, and something like emotional balance. But one that intrigued me was creativity. Is there evidence that actually the time that kids get to be outside in the natural world, especially perhaps by themselves, that helps with their creativity?
There is less evidence on creativity than there is on, for instance, psychological health or stress reduction. But the evidence that is there is very interesting. Kids have been studied playing in a natural play space with trees and bushes, et cetera, compared to a flat turf or cement playground. The kids in the natural play spaces are far more likely to invent their own games than the kids on the flat turf or cement playground. The leaders who emerge in these two environments are different. The leaders who emerge in the flat playground tend to be the physically strongest. That's good. It's good to be physically strong. But the kids who emerge as leaders in the natural play space tend to be the smartest kids. And that makes sense because they're inventing their own games. There's a lot more evidence on this that has to do with independent play, which is very, very important for the development of what's called executive function, which is the ability to control yourself, to be in charge of your world, in essence. And the best way to develop that is through independent make-believe play at an early age. Natural play spaces are far better for that than, say, a controlled playground or even organized sports for children. And that's that independent play, in addition to the natural experience, is what we've been taking away from kids.
That independent play is, of course, crucially, without mum or dad over the shoulder watching on right there. It's giving them some space to get on with it themselves.
That's right. One of the studies that was done within recent years was a reproduction of a study that was done in the 1940s in the United States, where they looked at executive function. And what they found is that a 7-year-old today has the executive function of a 5-year-old in the 1940s. In other words, we've sliced away 2 years of child development in terms of self-control. We're not doing these kids any favor by, A, taking them out of nature, and, B, by hovering over them every second.
No, indeed. On Life Matters today, my guest is the author Richard Louv. We're talking about something which we have touched on Life Matters before, the idea of letting our kids have the freedom to be outside, to be away from parental supervision, and how important it is. You, I know, Richard, are a great fan of the treehouse. Tell me about your own childhood career as a treehouse architect and builder.
I had to take out treehouses out of my book because I had too many of them because I have a soft spot for treehouses. But my own treehouse when I was a kid was at least 4 stories high, and it was in the biggest, oldest oak tree we could find. I recruited lots of neighborhood kids, and I was about 8 years old then, I think, and I got them to do the heavy lifting. And we had this just great, incredible treehouse that we built. And I understand that in Brisbane there was a controversy about a treehouse similar to the one that I had that was built by some neighbor kids and in a public space, and it caused quite a controversy. And I don't know at this stage how it all turned out, but that kind of activity, that kind of creativity of building your own treehouse or fort is really endangered, and it teaches kids so much. I'm not talking about the father or the adults who build a treehouse for kids. The experience of doing it yourself and making mistakes and learning all of the engineering. In the book, I have a list of kind of engineering and architectural lessons that kids learn from just building a treehouse, basic physics. All of that is lost when it's done for them by adults or when it's not allowed to be done at all. In the United States, the amount of rules and regulations similar to what was experienced in Brisbane is astonishing. Private governments have arisen in the United States, community association, neighborhood associations, that control people's lives in ways that they'd never allow public government to control. One woman told me that her community association recently outlawed chalk drawing on the sidewalks, which, you know, at some level we have to ask, have we gone insane? I mean, many of the communities, the new neighborhoods in my own town of San Diego, you can't put up a basketball hoop for kids, let alone let them build a treehouse or a fort. There are so many rules and regulations driving kids indoors.
Yeah. Well, look, since I was at primary school in the 70s, and there were treehouses in our school that kids had built over the years, that's unimaginable now. For me, it's very clear what kids have lost. But you see why it's happened, because parents and other people are concerned, and we live in a very litigious society, maybe not quite as litigious as yours, but people don't hesitate to take court action if something goes wrong.
And that's a real problem. And no, you're not quite as bad as we are in the United States yet, but you're getting there. And it's kind of a warning in terms of how far this can be taken. Again, thinking in terms of comparative risk, you know, pediatricians in the U.S. don't see very many broken bones in kids anymore. It used to be kind of a rite of passage.
Mm.
What they do see now are repetitive stress injuries, the kind you get from being at a computer too long or in front of playing a video game too long. And repetitive stress injuries like carpal tunnel, et cetera, tend to last a lot longer than the typical old-fashioned broken bone for a child. So, again, there is risk out there, but what are we trading that risk for? I believe we're trading it for larger risk. I mean, you know, we talk in terms of risk management. You know, people have to learn risk management for themselves. And how are they going to do that unless they take some small risks when they're kids?
One of the things, of course, is that kids model what their parents do. And you point this out, actually, in the book. Adults spend more of their time indoors, sitting down, than our parents did. How can we motivate kids to go outside if we're not doing that as much of it as we used to ourselves?
Well, it's a great point. And one of the things that we really encourage is, and we've heard this from nature centers and the people who work hard to get kids outdoors, is that parents really are just as important, grandparents too, as kids when we start to try to turn this around. Grandparents are an enormous resource. I mean, many people of grandparenting age actually remember when it was considered normal and expected to go outside and play in nature. They still have the memory, the skills. And increasingly, the young generation of parents now are parents who did not have that experience with nature. In a sense, they're the first denatured generation of parents. So even when they learn how great nature is, how I believe essential nature experience is for their child's healthy development, how it can help their kid be smarter and healthier and happier, and they want that for their child, they don't know where to start. So that's one of the reasons why the programs that help them do this are so important, and that they do have to focus as much on the parents as they do on the kids.
You mentioned in the book 100 actions to make children more connected with nature. If we just focus on a few things that parents can do, what are some of the things that people can try?
One of my favorite things that I suggest to parents is to create a family nature club. This is starting to happen in the United States, and it began about a year and a half ago when a young father and second grade teacher emailed me and said that he and his wife had become inspired by Last Child in the Woods and some other things they'd read. They started getting their kids out on weekends to the park and going on hikes, et cetera. And one day their five-year-old said, "Dad, how come we're the only family having this much fun?" So he started inviting other families. And today, just not that long later, he has over 400 families on his email list. And there are dozens and dozens of these type of clubs that are springing up around the United States. And what it essentially is that parents banding together to arrange what amount to family nature play dates. You know, let's four families, five, two families, show up at the park on Saturday and let's go for a hike together. what's important about this is that it deals with the fear issue because there's perceived safety in numbers. Mm. Any kind of family can do it. Think how great this would be for single-parent families, have great logistical issues. Any kind of economic group can do this, inner city, outer suburb, it doesn't matter. And you don't have to wait for funding. You can do it yourself and you can do it now. These things are springing up all over the U.S., and I hope they start springing up. And there may be forms of this that I don't know about already in Australia. But what if, 2 years ago, there were thousands of these family nature clubs? At that point, I think we'd be starting to see some really serious cultural change, which ultimately is the goal, not only more programs to get kids outdoors, but a deep cultural change.
Richard, hearing about that actually gives me hope for the future. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Richard Louv is the co-founder of the Children and Nature Network. He's also the author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. Let me know what you think. There was that case of a very high-profile but deemed to be too dangerous treehouse in Brisbane, you'll recall, not that long ago. You can comment at abc.net.au/rn/lifematters or on our Facebook page. And then there's the listener line. Leave a voice message. The number to call is 02-833-1430. Still to come today, It Took Over My Life, but next, the importance of forgiveness.